Edge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham. Sort of a quick podcast today, almost a pop-up type podcast. As a busy week for me, it's Tuesday as we're talking here, and I've got one more broadcast, fourth in 5 days, with the folks down at VMI. There'll be my third soccer game in 5 days. Also did football on the radio on Saturday. I'll be on ESPN3 today calling VMI men's soccer with Regent University. If you're listening to this before that, 4 o'clock is start time for that, and I'll be looking forward to getting that in. And then tonight, getting back home in time to watch the Nats and the Brewers in the NL wildcard game. We'll talk a little bit about that as we wrap this one up. This is mainly a UVA sports themed podcast, though. And we'll start with a column I just posted as I'm getting ready to start this podcast. Thinking a little differently about the onside kick call to start the second half against Notre Dame. I will tell you, and I said so in this column, honestly, and of course I was watching the game with half an eye towards that game, and then I was working the broadcast of VMI versus Wofford, so I got to look at things as in between plays sometimes, or in between series, or during timeouts, whatever. But I actually was looking up during this play, and thought when I first saw it, wow, what a great call, because it worked. And then I fell into that trap. Great call because it worked. I say this on broadcast when I do them on VMI football. Football fans in particular often fall into the trap of, if something works, it was a great call by the coach, and if it doesn't work, it was a terrible call by the coach. But live, it worked. And I loved when you watched the replay of it, and I got to see a couple of replays of it. I mean, you could tell that somebody who was studying Notre Dame on video saw something in the way that front line of your kick return unit for Notre Dame does what it does. That that they were cheating back or running back a little soon, and could be susceptible to a well-placed onside kick. Brian Delaney popped it up in the air perfectly. Bryce Hall ran it down, actually caught the ball on the fly at the 50-yard line. And so, great idea, great execution. It didn't lead to points. That's not the fault of the play call itself. Virginia got stymied on the series, punted. Notre Dame was inside their 10-yard line, had to punt back after a three and out. Virginia got the ball short field. We know what happened next. Strip sack, returned inside the 10. 2 plays later, Notre Dame scores 21-17. And at the time, I'm still not thinking, terrible about that. Okay, it's 21-17. We'll come back. But I will admit that, I think we may have been in at halftime of our game with VMI and Wofford for this little stretch. I will say, I do remember thinking 21-17, man, we played a lot of time there. In Notre Dame territory, didn't get anything to show for it. This kind of feels like we played our best card and still lost the hand. And it turned out that way. I mean, another strip sack led directly to a touchdown, and then the wheels came off the bus. We were up 17-14 at halftime and lost 35-20. It was really in the context, I'll be honest, I'm running around this morning. I listen to podcasts often when I'm running around. Dan Lebatard's show was breaking down the Mack Brown call to go for two at the end of North Carolina's 21-20 loss to Clemson. A reason for that loss being 21-20 was that Carolina scored what would have apparently been the game-tying touchdown. I think it was a minute 17 on the clock, fourth quarter. And instead, Mack Brown decides to go for two. I would agree with that call, too, given his reasoning. It was a 16-play, 75-yard drive. The Clemson defense was gassed. You got to feel like you got them on their toes. And then Mack even saying, hey, they're better than us. We don't want to play overtime. Give them a chance to kind of recollect themselves and use their better talent to beat us. We've got a chance right here against a gassed defense to score. We just didn't have the right play call and didn't execute it right. But the idea to go for two itself is not the fault here. And the Lebertard actually was making the point regarding that. Well, you often do those kind of things. You'll see teams, the underdog teams will go for two in weird situations like that. You'll see onside kicks. You'll see trick plays, gadget plays. because they know that they can't beat you one-on-one. They can't beat you straight up. They can't beat you schematically. So they got to do some weird things to kind of, you know, jimmy the system there a little bit. And so I'll go back to UVA Notre Dame. I wonder if now the onside kick was a signal from Bronco to his team. Now, great. Again, they saw something. They exploited it. Bronco even said he thought about making the call. Virginia scored three times in the first half. He even thought about, you know, doing something on one of those three kickoffs to say, hey, you know, we see something. We got to use it. But you just wonder again if what they did was send a message to the team. We don't think we can beat them straight up. And I didn't think going into this game, I didn't look at the talent levels on both sides. I didn't look at the way that the talent had been utilized to this point in the season on both sides and think that UVA was any kind of an underdog. Just because Vegas is your 11-point underdog doesn't mean you're an underdog. It's early in the season. Vegas is wrong all the time. The football power index from ESPN is wrong all the time, especially early in the season. And so, you know, did you send a message to your team that, okay, we think we have to do some crap to win this game? And again, I'll say that after that touchdown, I felt, you know, I'm not on the sidelines. I wasn't even in a stadium. I was in a different stadium working a different game. But I'll tell you that just what I got to see, I felt like we've already played our card here. It didn't work. What happens next? And what happened next was, you know, a cascade of things. But I just wonder. I'm just throwing it out there, and I think it's worthy of thought that maybe it was a little too aggressive a call. And even though it worked to a degree, it also didn't work. And the part that didn't work about it, I mean, Virginia goes down and scores, obviously. If you go up 24-14, I'm not talking about this right now, at least in this context. But, you know, the fact that it followed up with what followed up and Virginia was outplayed in the second half, couldn't run the ball against a 5.5-man box is what, as Brian Kelly, the Notre Dame coach, described their defensive scheme in the second half. A lot else happened there, but I just wonder about that call. Thought I'd talk real quick. Again, this has to be a quick podcast. I've got to get out the door to get to VMI for one more soccer game before I get a couple weeks break off from broadcast work. I went in yesterday, and I want to highlight that here in this podcast, some work I did on regarding baseball. Wanted to look at UVA players and how they fared in the major leagues. There are a lot of minor league guys. Didn't go through all those because this took a while to research these stats. But we've got a lot of alums in big league baseball, major league baseball. And wanted to kind of recap, you know, how some of those guys did this year. And it was some of the guys I was actually surprised to see. You know, I'm a Nats fan, so I watch the Nats a lot. I see the teams that they play. Of course, the Nats, two of the more prominent alums in Ryan Zimmerman and Sean Doolittle, are members of that team. And they also they play the Philadelphia Phillies. And we know about Adam Haseley getting called up this year. Also, Phil Gosselin. Might remember Phil Gosselin, that home run he had off Steven Strasburg in the NCAA tournament opener back in 2009. He also plays for the Phillies. You've heard of heard about how Danny Hulton finally made it to the big leagues after, you know, arm surgeries, 2 years out of baseball. The number two pick in 2011 finally got to the big leagues this year. But you know, some Chris Taylor. You know, he's been a Dodger for a few years now. You know, the guy who had the biggest individual hit in UVA history, at least. You know, maybe the 2015 team would have produced a guy or two who had some, but Taylor's two-run single in the bottom of the ninth that sent UVA to a World Series in that year, 2011. That's one of the top plays I've ever seen in person from a UVA team, especially. So quickly going through this, Sean Doolittle this year, he was the Nats closer. Right now, after getting back from the IL in August, he's not the closer anymore. I don't know that the Nats really have a defined closer. Daniel Hudson has closed. Doolittle has pitched a couple of ninth innings for this team since. He finished the year finished regular season, I should say, because the Nats have a wild card game today. Finished with a 6-5 record, 4.05 ERA, 29 saves, 6 blown saves, 66 Ks in 60 innings. So good numbers. He had a couple of bad innings that led to that 4.05 ERA, and a bad inning or two can really blow your ERA up on your relief pitcher. He threw 60 innings this year. You know, I remember a couple of the blown saves right before he went on the IL. The four runs he surrendered in a loss to The Mets, also the team that the Nats play today, the Brewers, he gave up, I think it was also four runs in that, and I don't think he finished either inning. The Mets lost, certainly not, because that was a walk-off. The Brewers was a home game, but he got lifted in the ninth inning in that one. So, you know, eight runs and probably maybe a full inning there total. That'll throw your ERA completely off. But Doolittle, if he's an eighth inning setup guy or a lefty situational guy, he's still a key guy for this Nats team. Derek Fisher, Toronto Blue Jays, having a hard time finding some consistent playing time, getting at bats. Formerly a member of the Houston Astros, scored a pretty meaningful run in the World Series with the Astros. Now with the Blue Jays, this year just a 161, 271, 376 slash line, six home runs, 12 RBIs. Gosselin, aforementioned, also having trouble getting some ABs. 44 games, 95 at bats in 2019. With considering the relatively limited number of at bats, good slash line, 262, 294, 308. At least not a lot of power there. No homer, 7 RBIs, but 262 batting average with that limited number of at bats. Not bad. Adam Haseley has surprised. Solid first season. He's a 2017 guy. He was, I think, the second member of that draft class to get to the big leagues. And he came up. He actually had a 67 games. He was averaging right about 3 at-bats a game. So he played a lot for this team. And a good slash line, 266, 324, 396, 5 homers, 26 RBIs. So promising first season for Haseley, I'd say. John Hicks, good power numbers, not a lot else. 13 homers, 35 RBIs for Detroit. 210, 240, 379 slash line. So I remember Hicks, man. He was a stud catcher at UVA on that 2011 team. Didn't win a World Series. 2015 won the World Series. That 2011 team was loaded. Danny Hulston was a 2011 guy. I'd mentioned number two pick in that draft. All the injuries, all the issues. Out of baseball, he was a volunteer assistant at UVA for 1 year in the midst of all this. Comes back. He was in AAA with Chicago this year, ERA in the low ones. Gets finally called up in September to the big club. 6 appearances, no earned runs. 3.1 innings because lefty situational guy. You're not going to pitch a complete inning every time out. But 5 Ks, two walks in 3 1/3, and no runs for a Cubs team that until the last few days of the season was actually still a playoff contender. Brandon Klein, here's one I have to admit. I knew about these other guys. I knew that the Fishers and Gosselins and Haseleys and certainly Doolittles and Hicks were in the bigs. We all have heard the Danny Hulston story. I completely missed that Brandon Klein had made the big team with Baltimore. In fact, was called up in April. That's how little I watched the O's. The other team on Masson. 1-4, 5.93 ERA, 34 appearances, 34 strikeouts, 19 walks, and 41 innings. So Klein, wow, remember him? He was a stud recruit, and took him a while to get called up, but finally up and getting a lot of appearances for that Baltimore team. I didn't know this one either. Chris Taylor is a member of the Dodgers. We've known that. Josh DeBoer's got called up in June and threw 9 innings. 8 ERA, actually had a decision, a loss in the game. But DeBoer's, man, he talk about a stud. He was a reason. Him and Brandon Waddell. Waddell is a starter, and DeBoer's was a starter for that team too. But remember that year, he actually transitioned to becoming a closer. Later as that season went on, and Sabores, man, his rubber arm in the NCAA tournament, the College World Series, was the key to that College World Series and that national championship for that 2015 team. He's in the bigs now. Talked about Taylor, 12 homers, 52 RBIs, 262, 333, 462 slash line for Taylor. Love that kid. Great. He's had several solid seasons now out there in L.A. Another guy out in L.A. playing for the Angels, Matt Theis, 2016. Key guy on the 2015 team also. Called up in July. Got his first taste of the big leagues. 147 at-bats. Had some solid individual games. Ended up with 8 homers, 23 RBIs. A 211, 293, 422 slash. That 422 slash suggests with a 211 batting average. That 422, the 422 slugging percentage suggests that, as the average numbers go up, the that slugging shows that when he puts the ball in play, he gets extra base hits. Finally, Ryan Zimmerman. Zim was on the IL for a long stretch this season. Only played in 52 games for the Nats in 2019. Six homers, 27 RBIs, 257, 321, 415 slash. So a lot of UVA guys, man, I tell you, you know. I remember when I was a student at UVA in the 90s, we didn't have many of those guys. I remember Seth Greisinger was the 96 team that went to the NCAA tournament. We just loved the fact that he got up to the big leagues and pitched a couple games for Detroit. And now you've got all these guys all over the place. In part, a reason I'm a Nats fan is because Ryan Zimmerman was I think he was a number four pick in 2005, 2004. And got called up that September and has played ever since with the Nats. That's the reason I'm a Nats fan is, I was rooting for the UVA guy in the big leagues, and now they're all over the place. So glad to see that. Glad to see that from this UVA group. I'm going to quickly go with an NL wildcard preview. And get this in before the game plays, right? Because the game's at 8:08 tonight on TBS. And, man, I think I said this on the podcast yesterday. I do with Jerry Carter on Mondays. I'm as nervous on this game. Not quite. But this is the first game, I should put it this way. The first game I've been as nervous about as I feel like right now since April 8th, the UVA Texas Tech basketball game. You know, you watch sports. You watch baseball all season long. Ups and downs with a baseball team, but man, a one-game playoff. That UVA basketball team, of course, played six one-game playoffs to get to the national championship. But one game between the Brewers and the Nats, two of the hottest teams in baseball right now, have been for an extended time. Goes the way it goes. This one could go any of a million different ways, obviously. I mean, it's one game. I was listening to an MLB podcast driving down to one of my VMI broadcasts this weekend, and a point was made that, I mean, I guess I'll relate it this way. If you're a Nats fan, you remember that the Nats lost a couple games to the Orioles this year. The Orioles, one of the worst teams in baseball. In a one-game scenario, you could put the Orioles or the Tigers or the Miami Marlins into a wild card game, and they would win that wild card game because baseball is like that. It's not like football. You're not going to put Central Arkansas up against Alabama in a game and see Central Arkansas ever beat Alabama. You're not going to have the Miami Dolphins beat the New England Patriots in a playoff game in a one-game scenario. But in baseball, man, weird things can happen. Balls can bounce a certain way. I mean, your pitcher can have an off day or the other team's pitcher can be hot and dominant that day. Baseball's weird. You can't predict it very easily one game. The Nats 74-38 since May 24th. We all know that. They've won 10 of their last 11. They won their last 8. That last week was, I was dreading that last week for weeks leading into it. You had 5 with the Phillies. You had 3 with the Indians. The Phillies, when they got to Washington, were still a fringe playoff contender. If they had taken that series, if they had won 4 of 5 or even swept the series on their side, they could have been a wild card team. Certainly in Cleveland in the AL going into maybe Thursday was a pretty solid AL wildcard contender. They lost on Thursday. They got swept by the Nats this weekend and played their way out of wildcard contention. But, man, that week, 8 games against those teams had me scared, and the Nats won all 8. Milwaukee had been just on a torrid streak, 20-4 going into the weekend. They got swept by Colorado. They had a chance, if they'd have won any of those 3 games, they had a chance to play into a one-game playoff for the NL Central because the Cardinals were struggling down the stretch themselves. Cardinals eventually win the division, and so now it's of course, the Brewers and the Nats as a result. Milwaukee starting Brandon Woodruff. Only pitched 4 innings in the last couple of months because of injury, but he's 11-3, 3.62 ERA on the season, 22 starts. Washington's going, of course, with Max Scherzer. We've known that for a few days now. 11-7 record, 2.92 ERA on the season, but also kind of struggling. Now, Woodruff's only pitched 4 innings in the last month and a half to 2 months, somewhere in that range. Scherzer has, coming back from the IL, has been 2-2, 4.74 ERA since coming back in mid-August. But it's hard to say, you've got Max Scherzer on your team in your dugout, and Max, we're not going to use you today. It's one game, and we've got he's either the best or the second, you know, one of the two best pitchers over the last 10 years in Major League Baseball. It'd be him and Clayton Kershaw. Neither of whom's had great success. Max is 4-5 in postseason play. And Kershaw, of course, has had his famous struggles in the postseason. But it's still hard. I mean, you know, you've got that guy. You've got to use him, right? Now, I think you can expect out of this, as part of my preview of this, you can expect that both teams are going to have – it's a game seven. Let's just put, you know, let's treat it like a game seven. You can't worry about what happens if you get to game one, in the next series against L.A. You can't worry about that, because if you don't win today, there is no L.A. There is no next series. So for Milwaukee, I'm thinking that might mean some Zach Davies, some Chase Anderson, and, of course, they've got the dominant relief pitcher, traditional relief pitcher in this matchup, Josh Hader. I'm of 2.62 ERA, 16.4 strikeouts per nine innings. He blew a save on Saturday night that would have put Milwaukee in the divisional tie with St. Louis, but he's still Josh Hader. The Nats have, I mean, I think an advantage here just because, yeah, if you're playing this as a regular season game, the Nats have the worst bullpen in baseball, the worst ERA of their of any bullpen in all of Major League Baseball, including teams like the Orioles and Royals and Tigers. But the bullpen today isn't the bullpen that you played the rest of the season with. Again, you got to play. You kind of win today if you want to play. I think it's Thursday. You'd start in L.A. So Steven Strasburg would normally be his rotation spot just based on rest. He pitched on Thursday, 4 days rest. He would be pitching today if we were in a regular season kind of scenario. You got to think he's available. You got to think that Patrick Corbin can give you an inning or two. Patrick pitched on Saturday. Obviously if things go perfectly for this team, and Scherzer, well, perfectly would be Scherzer giving you nine innings. I don't think that's the case anymore with really anybody in these kind of scenarios. I can only every pitch tonight from every pitch thrown by both teams is going to be so pressure packed that I just can't imagine that either side gets more than seven innings, probably not more than six innings out of their starting pitcher, because every pitch is fraught with peril. But obviously, if it's okay, so perfect scenario would be nine innings out of your starter, and then you get to save these two guys if you win. You know, obviously, you get nine innings out of your starter, you're thinking you're going to win. And then you're set up to have those two guys starting your first two games. But I think if you get six out of Max, you throw Strasburg out there for 7 and 8, and then Corbin to finish in the ninth. I mean, that just feels to me the way you might do things if you're Davey Martinez. And that wouldn't be a bad way to win a baseball game. I think that you have to look at a couple other things. As, again, on paper, slight advantages to the Nats. The Nats played there last week at home. The Brewers were on the road in Cincinnati and in Denver, and an altitude in Denver. They basically then just, got on a plane in Denver. I assume, I don't know this, but I assume they wouldn't have flown to Milwaukee and then picked up stuff and then flown to Washington on Monday. I would assume that you knew you were playing in Washington. You would have just gone ahead and flown, gotten a hotel, had Monday as an off day to rest instead of flying around all over the place. So they're still living out of suitcases that they took with them a week and a half ago. That is what it is. I mean, the Nats have been sleeping in their own beds for a week, and these guys have been flying all over the place. It's got to be an advantage. Whatever advantage it is, it's an advantage for Washington. I think an advantage is that Milwaukee – had to play thinking that they could have played their way into the NL Central Division title, which means you bypass a wild card game and you get a chance to go straight to the next round. And so they had to play all the way through Sunday thinking that was a possibility. Whereas the Nats knew on Tuesday they were a wild card team. I don't know that they put a lot of emphasis on hosting this game. They were able to rest guys. They didn't rest they didn't rest everybody the whole week. You'd see Soto was out of the lineup here. Rendon was out here. Turner was out here. Dozier was out here. You had different guys out. They still also got at bats. They keeping themselves in a flow, but also getting some rest. So that's got to be a slight advantage. A big edge to Washington is something that the Brewers have been playing with for a while. Christian Yelich isn't going to be there. Christian Yelich is I don't know that he's the MVP. That's another podcast. But he's the most outstanding player in baseball this year, I think. 44 homers, 97 RBIs, 671 slugging, 329 batting average, 429 on base. went down on September 10th, hit himself with a foul ball and his kneecap broke his kneecap. Now, Milwaukee's had to play without him for a while. They won 13 of their first 15 before going, 7-5 down the stretch, and that mostly was the three-game series sweep at the hands of the Rockies, whatever cold stretch they've had. But, yeah, anytime you get to play Milwaukee without having to worry about Christian Yelich is a good day. The Nats know that very well. He had two homers in that 15-14 game. That was one of the better games, even though sloppy, better games I've seen in a while. So I'd say slight advantages in a few different ways to the Nats. They got to play the game, and that's tonight at 8:08. So I will certainly be watching. A lot of you guys will be watching as well. It should be a lot of fun. So got to wrap it up. Got to get on the road to VMI. Thank you for listening to the podcast here, and we'll be back with you tomorrow. I think we're going to actually do another quick UVA theme one tomorrow. Maybe talk some Virginia Tech football as well. And then I'm heading to the All Elite Wrestling Show tomorrow night, so I got to do a quick one before I get on the road to DC. A lot of road trips for me here in the next few days. But thank you for listening, and thank you for joining in, and have a great day.